Live. Hey guys, this is Walt from the Banff Podcast, and today we are initiating part one of Operation Golden Guard. What is Golden Guard? Well, in order to figure that out, we have Mr. Vito Del Sante here, who is going to talk about the project and where it's going, where it's coming from, and what we can all get from it. How you doing today, Vito?
I'm great. Thanks, guys.
Hey, thanks for coming. We appreciate it. Two co-pilots with me today. Oh, go ahead, Vito.
You know, I was going to say, you know how it is. You invite me anywhere and I'll bring the chips or something, and I'll just probably make a mess in your backyard or something. I don't know.
We want you in the living room, you know, because you know, it's interesting that way. Yeah. We have two co-pilots here with us today. We have, starting from my left to my right, from across the pond, we have Mr. Aid Smith. How are you, sir?
I'm good, thank you.
And always good to have you. And my brother from another mother, Mr. Dom Sumner from down in Virginia Way. How you doing, sir?
Pretty good, sir. They let me out the asylum long enough to join you guys. Gotta nice. Get back for my nightly meds, though.
Good times. Contained. So to kick things off, we have Golden Guard. The message went out not too long ago. We've been getting hints about this project for a little while now, but the call went out to all fans of anything Stray, anything Charlie McKelvey. It was join us on Thunderclap. So did you want to talk about that first before we actually get into Golden Guard and what Thunderclap is and how it was used to kind of push the process?
Well, when I did the second Stray Kickstarter, we kind of use, and I say we meaning Sean, Zach Rosenberg and myself, Sean Isaacs, my co-creator, and Zach Rosenberg, who helped me tremendously with the two campaigns. But Zach is, he's kind of like my secret weapon in a lot of ways. He's like my editorial guru. He's kind of he was much more in tune with Kickstarter when I started doing Kickstarter than I was. You know, I'd been a contributor to a couple of different anthologies that had funded on Kickstarter, but I'd never run one for New Paradigm Studios. So you guys might remember that Stray was initially supposed to be a New Paradigm Studios book, but the funding fell through on their end, so we took it to Action Lab. So when we did the second one, us kind of a to do is raise this amount of money, and we can, you know, just start putting the book out. And then what'll happen is we will print the book, and the profits from that first issue will then go towards paying the second issue. So we ended up funding two issues out of the second Kickstarter, which I'm getting off track. So to kind of get the word out with the second Stray Kickstarter, we use Thunderclap, and Thunderclap has mostly been used as a means to get charities noticed. So I didn't really think that I would use it ever for my own kind of selfish purposes. But I figured, all right, well, while I'm doing the Stray Kickstarter, I'm going to do a second kind of fundraiser and try to bring attention to Stubby Dog organization. Stubby Dog Inc., I think it is, but it's stubbydog.org. And they're a pit bull kind of advocacy company that just wants people to reconsider what the pit bull is, and, you know, what the stigma of pit bulls are. So we made a Stray Stubby Dog t-shirt. Basically, it was a Stray shirt that all the proceeds went to Stubby Dog. And what we wanted to do is we kind of wanted, I'll be completely honest, we were trying to be selfish in trying to get those folks that know about Stubby Dog and are supporters of them to kind of help us fund our book. But I don't know if we got that much crossover, but either way, we funded the book, you know, so it something worked. But, we sold the t-shirts and stuff, and we wanted to just get the word out through Thunderclap. So we needed 100 people to sign up. We got 106, maybe 108, which was great, you know, cause then you get, what happens is it latches onto your social network. So if you donate a tweet like if you have 5,000 followers, it's basically counting all 5,000 of those against a large aggregate of everybody else that signs up. So Walt, you signed up for a tweet, you have 3,000 followers. It's now 8,000. We're now potentially reaching 8,000 people. So without having the numbers in front of me, I don't remember how well Stray did in terms of like the social reach, click throughs and stuff like that. But I do know this, we were funded in 3 days. Fully funded in 3 days. So there has to be a correlation, I would imagine, between using Thunderclap to get the word out and getting Stray funded. As of today, we have 149 people that have signed up to donate a tweet, a Facebook status, a Tumblr post, or all three in some cases for the Golden Guard. And we are looking at a potential, just have seen that tweet, of 220,000 people. So that's a lot of people. I mean, it's not only 149 people are signed up. So it's not like it's going to trend unless all 220,000 people retweet what they see, you know, like that's the only way it'll trend. But that's a lot of people for, you know, for us to get in front of on day one. And we still have a couple of days to get more people, which is great. You know, like if we can get 230,000, you know, or 250,000 potentially, who knows, you know, like it would be a great day one bombast of everyone knowing about this Kickstarter.
That's fantastic. So let's,
it's a nice tool. Like I don't use it lightly. You know what I mean? Like I hate using it for my own selfish means, but I feel like a lot of Kickstarters are, and a lot of Kickstarter campaign creators are using it now. So I don't feel as bad.
Right on. So let's dive a little into the meat of the matter. And that's actually what the Golden Guard is. How did the Golden Guard come about? I know I saw you, you know, a bunch of the guys I like to call the crew on Facebook, throwing it back and forth. You, Charlie, Andrew Lorenz.
Yeah.
How did it come about? Was this a drunken party that you guys all got together? And
I don't drink.
There you go.
I wanted to make a really funny. What's that?
So that's what really makes it bad. He's got a hangover and he doesn't even drink.
What had happened was it all comes from Stray first. And really where Golden Guard comes from is Actionverse. It's not an Actionverse. Golden Guard is not related to Actionverse in the sense that Action Lab is a part of this. They're not. It's not a part of the Molly Danger universe or necessarily the Midnight Tiger universe, but it is a part of the Stray universe. And I'll get into, you know, that in a bit. But what happened was we had gotten along really well on doing Actionverse, and Ray Anthony Hyde and myself just started talking about, because our characters have always been connected. So Stray and Midnight Tiger are in the same universe, no matter what, you know, like no matter what it is. And the thing is, when we were talking to Jamal about Molly Danger, there wasn't a lot of like legacy per se, you know, there wasn't a lot of history in the Molly Danger universe. Molly Danger, I think, arrives on Earth, I want to say 1977, maybe 1987, something like that. She's been around for 30 years. So the timeline might've shifted since, you know, he's created. So there's not a lot, there's no golden age potential there. And with Stray, Doberman, his father is the second Doberman. I don't know if everyone that's read Stray got the handbook, but it says Doberman 2. So your question should be, well, who's Doberman 1? So let's build a team around the idea of the Golden Age. And Ray and I had started going back and forth. I had like four or five characters that I wanted to use. He had four or five characters that he wanted to use. So we started kind of developing it. And somewhere in us developing it, Sean was involved with doing designs. You guys might not know him, but David Bednarski, who I did Prisoner of None with, fantastic artist, amazing conceptual artist, really. And his designs are just phenomenal. So the four of us, which I was just kind of going back and forth, excuse me while I mute my phone. The four of us were kind of going back and forth about, you know, what we wanted to see, you know, what characters, and I knew kind of the inkling of the story I wanted to tell, but it wasn't nearly what the story is now. But Ray had to drop out. Like, he had another commitment at the time. I think he was doing, he was working on, I want to say, the Guardians of the Galaxy cartoon, doing some storyboards and stuff. So he really didn't have the time. And so I said, all right, well, and he goes, you know, you can use these characters that, you know, that I'm throwing in if you want, which, excuse me, I decided not to do, because I just didn't think that was fair to Ray to not be a part of developing his characters with me. So I just said, you know, like, if somebody comes up that I want to use, I'll use them and work with somebody. And Charlie was the next person on the list. He just happened to be somebody who, I mean, we've talked about him on the show when I've been on before, and I've been on the show with him before. And Charlie and I just get along really well, you know, and we, at the time, were working on a WatchGuard Aegis, you know, Aegis is the JLA team from Stray. We were working on a WatchGuard Aegis miniseries, and we were just getting along.
Please clicking. Take my money.
It might happen at some point. In fact, without jumping too far ahead, we've already discussed what our project after Golden Guard is going to be. And it's similar to what we were planning for the WatchGuard Aegis miniseries, but it's going to be a one shot. It's probably going to be about 80 pages, you know, and so we've already started talking about that. But we're doing all this. And then I just said, hey, you know, what golden age characters do you have? And he started throwing some names out, and I was like, do you want to do this with me? And he said, yeah. And it was about a year ago. This is really funny that we're doing this almost a year later. About a year ago, Carlos Caballero, he and I had been friends on Facebook for a while. I met him in 2006 while I was doing the Mercury Chronicles at Speakeasy Comics. And if you don't know what that is, that's fine. It never came out. But there was a Zero issue. And the Zero issue was enough to draw Freddie Williams II, you know, who would work and who's doing some work on I forget the name of the book at Speakeasy, but he brought his friend over, and Carlos and I talked. I gave him a comic, and like many years later, I find out that this is how we met. And my first question was I a dick to you when you met me? He's like, no, you weren't a dick. So, but funny enough, this is the secret history that I hope when you guys interview Charlie, you'll bust his balls about. After San Diego Comic Con in 2006, I emailed Carlos and I said, hey, you know, let's get some ideas going. Let, you know, what do you want to draw? You know, this and the other thing. He never emailed me back. So when I found that email, I actually replied to him and I go, hey, when am I going to get an answer for this? Golden Guard already, you know, just to like be like a little, you know, salt in the wound and stuff. He's like, I'm so sorry. But, you know, and he had said too that I don't think I was the artist that could have done a kind of job like this back then, which is great. You know, you don't want somebody, the best thing about that is you don't want somebody to do something that they're not ready for, but really you don't want to have somebody commit to something that they're not ready for, you know, like, so Carlos had posted this image of the Justice Society. And I'm actually looking around in my room because I have the original here somewhere. And Charlie and I, again, we were already talking about the Golden Guard, and Carlos posts this thing. And Carlos wanted to work with me for a while. And I see this thing and I forward it to Charlie and I go, I didn't think we were holding auditions, but I think he got the part. And so the three of us just started talking literally about a year ago. So it's just coincidence. And it's funny because like I talk to Ray every day, I talk to Sean every day, and they're both, even though their fingerprints are on the book still, even, you know, even though Ray didn't get into the development of the story much, his fingerprints are still there. The fact that those two guys want to back the book today and are excited about the book just makes me feel good. Like I posted something the other day that I'm just like, I'm a little overwhelmed by how positive I am about this book and its chances. So that's the secret origin, I guess.
Nice. Now, this is going to be more than just a comic, isn't it? There's going to be some cross-platform. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. The thing about the three of us is we all recognize what our strengths are. And Charlie is a fantastic writer, but he's a really good conceptualizer. And he had come up with like the arthropod, which was the Captain Scarab's mode of transportation. Like he'd come up with a couple of different things, you know, like, and it just, when you throw an idea at Charlie, he doesn't throw you back the same idea. You know, he throws it back different, better, advanced, more, you know, more evolved, you know, like, you know, if you think of a car with four wheels, Charlie's going to throw you a truck with seven. Why is there a seventh wheel? Oh, it's going to be in the middle, so it'll pivot on it. You know, that kind of thing. Like Charlie's just, you know, really conceptually a fantastic guy, you know,
like fantastic. Is there a fucking Golden Guard?
No, not yet. I won't say no, but, I recognized too, was that he didn't really take away the writing from me. So he let me write it and he just did some cursory edits on it. You know, what if we tried this, or, you know, hey, you know, how about having this guy say this instead? And I was like, we're not using Charlie to his full potential. We got to get Charlie really involved in this. And I said, Charlie, what if we develop a game? And Charlie had already developed a role-playing game with WatchGuard. And Charlie was definitely on board. And he's so ambitious too, God bless him. Because he's like, what if we created our own gaming system? You know, like our own like kind of, like, you know, rule system. I was like, oh, do we have time to do that? And he's like, no, we don't. But, you know, we should look to do it. So, you know, we're using Mutants and Masterminds, you know, because it's open source. And he's coming up with stats and doing all that stuff and coming up with a campaign with, I think he and Sketch Pacino are going to do the campaign for us. And in the first book, you know, the first book that we're putting together now, the campaign takes place in the Golden Age. And then the next book will take, the campaign will take place in the Modern Age. So, to give you a hint of what's coming.
There are plans to continue the legacy of this book into the modern. So we could see an intersection with Stray.
Here's, I'll give you the I wouldn't call it the elevator pitch. This is basically what the story is about. You have a Golden Age team. It is comprised of a couple of different types of characters. There's kind of like a Black Olympian. There's a kind of Booster and Beetle kind of relationship between King Jaguar and Captain Scarab, where one guy builds and the other one's like kind of like the test driver. You have like the Femme Fatale in Scarlet Orchid. Eidolon, who is one of my favorite characters, her concept was basically female space ghost, go. You know, like it was just, what is female space ghost? Just go with it. And, you know, they're just all kind of disparate, kind of different characters. And the only two characters I really knew ahead of time, because the Doberman's not in this book. The first Doberman's not in this book. You find out later why. Apex, who is the Titan from Stray. Apex is his brother. And Astraea from Stray as well, that is their niece. You guys might have seen on Facebook, Carlos posted a picture of Kronos, and it said 1945 and 2008 or whatever it was. And Kronos was the guy in the middle. That's Astraea's father. So it's kind of like this royal family from an alien world. They have powers. They are considered sacred births. But you know, they're on our Earth, they're basically Superman, Supergirl kind of characters. So those were the only two folks that I knew because they came from Stray, and just putting together the team around, not even around them. I wanted them to not take such a big role in the story because like Americana just, she means so much to the story, as does Cadmus, as does King Jaguar and Silent Shield. Silent Shield is basically our version of Snake Eyes and Captain America mixed together.
Yeah, I love, you know what I mean? Like, character concept on that. Going back to the preview that you sent us and allowed mm-hmm. us to take a look at, the Silent Shield concept art really, really is like, you just look at it for a second and the image that you have of him holding that guy, you know, holding the shield and just, he's half poised for action, but yet he's half poised for looks like he's analyzing everything going on. Mm-hmm. Very iconic.
He's a lot of fun to write in the script because he talks in sign language, so you're going to get subtitles every time he talks, and he's so fun to work with because it's all body language, so you have to make sure what he's saying. In a comic book, there's no such thing as body language. You know, there's facial expressions, but there's no body language. So you have to make sure what he's saying with his hands, because we do use ASL.
Oh, that's awesome.
Even though I do, like, we're cheating, because I don't think ASL was established in 1945. Like, I think there was, you know, you actually had to spell words out and stuff. But we're using ASL just to kind of as a cheat. You know, we know it's not, it didn't exist, but it's not the real world, so. Don't give me
that. In this Trayverse, it was invented in 1936. That's what it was
like. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So he's an interesting visual character because you have to do stuff like that. But characters are so rich that, you know, you didn't have to have Astraea take stage. You didn't have to have Apex take center stage. You could just kind of like use them as kind of set dressing to kind of let stray readers in on it, you know, and kind of just like, oh, I see how this connects, you know, or something like that. Because it connects to Stray and it connects to Watchguard, you know, like this is kind of the first inkling that Watchguard and Stray are also in the same universe. So it's because their histories are tied. And, you know, I just wanted to make sure that there was something there for everybody, you know, like that I didn't want to not disappoint my audience, but I didn't want to kind of forget them in a sense. Like I like, if you like Stray, then I want you to continue to like Stray. So I'm going to build that universe for you kind of thing.
Nice.
I don't even know if that answers your question, funny enough. Oh,
absolutely. The elements of the Golden Guard, obviously in the preview, which once again, thank you for sending that.
Absolutely.
There's a lot of iconic art in there. The story, you can already tell. There's been a lot of work drafting the history.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Yeah. I know. We've talked once or twice, so yeah.
I can guess. Yeah.
Can you tell it? Give us an inkling of what kicks off the story. What brings the Golden Guard together to start doing what they have to do?
Absolutely. So, the three of you have seen. I hope the three of you have seen it, but I know Walt has at least. So at least we have to talk to Walt. Okay,
he sent us a copy to look over.
You've seen that. The first thing that you see is Theo Concord, which I'm going to give you guys a little bit of a inside look into how my brain works. Theo Concord, who used to be Captain Scarab, Theo Concord, Ted Cord. He's basically my Blue Beetle. So Theo is giving a speech at a college, and the speech is about the history of the Golden Guard, which is what the book is. The book that you guys got to look at is the free book that backers will get a page once a week to kind of fill, while we're making the book, they'll be able to fill in blanks for what they need to know before the book actually gets in their hands. So
that is an amazing idea.
Yeah. Yeah. It was important that we didn't take for granted that you don't know who these people are. So Theo's giving a speech at a college to talk about the Golden Guard and his history with it and stuff. And on the first page, he says it didn't begin in World War II, which is what your assumption would be. It's called the Golden Guard. He said it didn't begin in the Revolutionary War, which everyone guard in that universe would assume because of Americana. And he's again in the United States, which is then when you turn the page, you get Roland, who was one of Charlemagne's paladins, sounding the horn called the Oliphant. And it shattered his eardrums and possibly destroyed his mind. Because Charlemagne gave it to him to sound for reinforcements, and reinforcements never came. He died, you know, fighting to his last breath. We start the book, the Golden Guard comic. It's kind of a Honorata, who is known as the 13th Knight or the Unicorn Knight, she is retelling the story of the Oliphant. And so apparently the Gorgos, who are our kind of Nazi stand-ins, they have found it. And if they get their hands on it, you know, all hell's going to break loose. It's kind of like your typical Spear of Destiny type of JSA story, you know, where there's an artifact that can turn the tide of the war towards evil and towards the Nazis. And the Gorgos, they're not necessarily Nazis. The best way I could describe them is, do you guys remember the first Hellboy movie, Cronin? Exactly a Nazi, but he does work with or for the Nazis and stuff. And it's kind of like that, and the things that you would see in Hellboy and stuff. So they're like a kind of supernatural group that believes very strongly in these supernatural artifacts. And so one of the things that you guys haven't seen yet, that you guys probably won't see until the Kickstarter is over, is we actually did a first campaign for the RPG at New York Comic Con, and it was on postcards, you know, and it was like a 5-card set. There were 3 heroes, 1 villain that doesn't appear in the book, and the campaign was they were trying to find the Aqua Scepter, and the Aqua Scepter came from Atlantis, I believe, is where what we did. But again, like, it's these kind of artifacts that, you know, like the Nazis were obsessed with. And so, like, they're, you know, so we're setting up this world where these things exist, you know. And so the story kicks off with them trying to stop the Gorgos from getting their hands on the Oliphant of Roland. So and what happens is the team gets split up. So there's Apex isn't there, Captain Scarab isn't there, and El Capitan isn't there either. But the rest of the team, because they have to go to Berlin, like they did. We barely talk about why they have to go to Berlin, and the rest of the team's going to Paris. And so they go to Paris, and then that's where the story kicks off.
Nice. Now I'm getting ahead of myself. Before I kick off with another question, Dom, A, did you guys have anything that you wanted to ask?
Okay, I'm just actually, while you were reading that, or saying that, I was actually just going through the preview again. And I want to see more of the Western guys. The Western Black Viper, because I love Western stuff. So those pages, yeah, just like, they're so nice.
Yeah, I was looking at
one. There's,
go ahead.
What's that, Dom?
Oh, I said I was looking at, when I looked through the preview, I was like, the artwork really caught me, and just some of the images in there, like you were saying with Americana, where she's depicted, where I don't want to say too much. just like the various Black Vipers that have appeared and some of the other characters. Huh? So just a little sense of history it gave in just those few pages.
Exactly. Well, yeah.
You know, what? I'm a fan of the Phantom, you know, Lee Falk's Phantom.
And I was just going to say that.
And that's what the Black Viper is for us. You know, like the legacy of the Black Viper is really, really something that, first of all, Black Viper, if you guys go to Public Domain Superheroes, the wiki, you'll see that I came up with the idea of the legacy of the Black Cobra. Black Cobra was a public domain character. So basically, I just took that idea and turned it into the Black Viper, because once it's public domain, anybody can take that legacy. But I was like, I'm going to do it and just change the name and really kind of extrapolate a lot of things from it for this story. So, and he starts off in the Wild West. One of the things you probably won't see for a while anyway is that he was in Kappa City, which is mentioned in the preview. And in the Old West, the sheriff of Kappa City was a guy by the name of Tex Leonis, who is actually an alien lion. So like a lion man alien. So like, I don't know if you're going to see it here, but you know, you probably will see it at some point. But yeah, the Black Viper and Americana. And again, like, I wanted to make sure that there was, the research I did for just not so much the history of where everything would fit, like the Doolittle Raid is something that you'll see. The Doolittle Raid is the first thing that the Golden Guard, that's their first mission. So, you know, where would they fit in? What year would this be? then you have to determine, all right, when is everybody born? You know, like, what year is this person possibly born so that they can be 20 something years old at this day, you know, while this is happening? And at least three sleepless nights trying to figure out exactly how to work it, you know, and like how to make everything work. And there might be one or two hiccups, but I think it's pretty seamless in terms of real history and what could, like, Cadmus was in the 36 Olympics with Jesse Owens. So was he 19 at that Olympics? I don't know. You know what I mean? Like I didn't know that at first, but we figured it out, you know, exactly when and where he was born and all that stuff. And like, it's so like, I feel like, do you ever like read a Warren Ellis book and people are like, that technology doesn't exist, you know? And so they question how that technology could work. And the whole idea of a comic book is to shut your brain off and just read. Yeah. That's kind of the same idea with the history stuff, because I realize that like, I'm not a historian and some things have been disproven even in like the 3 years that I've been, 2 years that I've been developing it, you know, like, they're like, well, this guy wasn't actually here. Like that was a lie on his part or whatever it is, you know? So history, once we, you know, we've gotten the technology where we're getting better with knowing, you know, and learning things. And so, so some things might have hiccups, but I feel like a lot of it is super accurate, and it'll be fun for history buffs to kind of like go through and just go, oh, look at that. Like, that's where that fits in. Like, there's, oh man, I don't want to ruin it, but there's something coming in the history book that when you guys see it, you're going to lose your minds, because wow, there's no way that it could exist. You know what I mean? And that's why we did it. Because
that's the good thing about a comic book, though. You can make modifications of the history because it's not the real world.
Exactly.
Right.
Alternate history. Exactly. So this is the rumor. It was disproven, but in our world, it was fact.
It happened.
So
it happened that way.
Yeah. Here's the thing. So we're kind of taking a cue, in a sense, from Marvel. And when they come to the modern age, what kind of political landscape are they going to come across? Now, when we were putting it together, we didn't know that Trump would win, but we just kind of, and we didn't even want to deal with the president. We were dealing with senators and lobbyists. And as we finished the first book, and you know, as the election happened and everything, I kind of sent a message to both of them. I was like, I kind of want to put Trump in the book, but not Trump, because he's got an ego and I don't want him to see himself in my book and either endorse or destroy. You know what I mean? Like, it has nothing to do with him per se. It's just that I wanted to, like, the political landscape that we are living in right now. And I'm not, you know, it's not about who you voted for that I'm trying to get across, but it is about certain freedoms that are coming into question now, or certain voted on recently, you know, like the immigration ban, you know, or the education thing that's coming up that they're going to be voting on, like things like that. Like, from a creator standpoint, if you step back and like look at it, and you can just see, oh, I can use that, you know, I can make that work within the context of this fictional world. So we have a stand-in for the president, you know, but we're not going to explicitly attack him per se. You know what I mean? It'd be too easy in some ways, because he's a very easy target in a lot of ways. You know what I mean? But we're making a really big political statement with this book, and to tackle low hanging fruit is just not our bag. We want to make sure that what we're saying is said clearly and distinctly, and this is what it is, and this isn't spoiling anything, but what we realized at some point this week, literally within the past 7 days, I realized this, and I brought it up to the guys, was that without planning it, without like intentionally, the only thing we planned was that we wanted a woman to be the leader of the group. So without really planning it, our team is comprised of some of the most marginalized minorities in our country. Like, our team does not have a straight white male heterosexual leader. Do you know what I mean? Like we have Americana, she's a woman, right? We have Cadmus, he's an African American. We have King Jaguar, who's not the leader. And I don't really, I don't want to spoil too much, but I'm going to say this because I think it's important to say, he's gay. Silent Shield is handicapped. He's mute. Kid Viper and Honorata are, they're not millennials per se, but they are teenagers, but they will kind of take that kind of a millennial role within the story. And then Theo, who is a senior citizen. Like, there's not, it's not, there's no Superman. There's no Alan Scott for that matter, you know, like, and I don't mean New 52 Alan Scott, who is gay, but like there's no, like, you know, the traditional Alan Scott, Jay Garrick, you know, Carter Hall kind of white guy leader kind of thing. We don't have that, you know? So the political landscape, again, being the backdrop to what is going on in the modern era of this story, is really, really interesting to put that team into. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah.
Go ahead, Walt. I'm sorry.
Oh no, I was going to say that one of the things that we've seen for the past 70 years in comics is we've seen a lot of different angles on the same protagonist, and
right.
I think a lot of indie creators, especially, are going away from that, starting all the way back to. And I bring this up just because it's one of my favorite comics, and even though it doesn't get a lot of love, and I think I would sell a minor organ just to get it restarted again, is Shadowhawk, Jim Valentino's Shadowhawk. Okay. At the time, I was dazed and awestruck that it was so great that the center of the story was you know, yes, he was an African American, but they were actually taking on the AIDS crisis at the time. Mm-hmm. You know, in a way that didn't. It wasn't him standing on a desk like waving a flag saying, "I have AIDS, but you have to acknowledge who I am." You know, it was. It just happened to be he was an African American. It happened to be he did have HIV, but that was beside the point. You know, it was the story of a man who had a little time left, and what was he going to do with it? Mm-hmm. And that,
yeah,
you know, those kind of stories, I think, sort of kickstarted where we are heading for today, which is we've seen the guy with the square jaw and the, you know, the guy who's traditionally in that role, and I think people are going to respond to this well because we want to see some other stories now. So that's definitely a cool thing.
Yeah. You know, the whole idea, I'll give you the real, where the idea of the Olden Guard came from. And it'll really color what I just said and what you just said too, Walt, is that, I can't remember if I had seen, no, I had heard a podcast about, Emmett Till. Emmett Till was an African American boy that was killed for he was lynched for looking at a white woman in the South a certain way, and apparently it is now, like, in the past month, come out that she made up the story. So
yeah, I remember that. I remember seeing that. Yeah,
yeah,
in the newspaper. Yeah.
So I was just thinking, what if you could take Emmett Till from right before he was killed and bring him to the modern era and see how black people are treated today. Like, and specifically, at the time when it was coming up, like, this is, I think it's 5 years now that Trayvon Martin was shot, something like that. Today was like 5 years ago or 6 years ago that Trayvon Martin was shot or something. And I was just thinking, like, you know, if he could see, you know, the advancement of black people from, 1930 something when he was killed to now, would he see a change? And like the idea was that maybe he wouldn't, maybe it would anger him that his death was for nothing. And that's where Cadmus came from. Cadmus is basically Mr. Terrific, put into the golden age, you know, he is the smartest man in the world. He's the strongest, fastest, you know, like a human being. Like, he's a human being at the peak of his abilities, you know, like he's an Olympian. And he does recognize that, you know, in the 40s that, you know, black people are marginalized. They're put into roles in society that, you know, are, you know, still, you know, not not equal. And he's, you know, fighting, you know, by being on the team, he believes that he can become the example for, you know, not just black people to strive for, but for white people to kind of, you know, give acceptance to. So when he comes into the present, he finds out, number one, that he was killed. He was lynched in Alabama in the 60s. So like right away, you know that there's a time difference. So he leaves in 1944 and he's in 2017. And when he arrives, and four characters have to deal with that they're not around or that they died, you know, or whatever. So, you know, that at some point everybody goes back, you know, and that's what volume, book three is about, I should say, about how they, you know, why they have to go back. So Cadmus finds out that he was lynched, and that, you know, then he sees the news and he sees Trayvon Martin, Eric Garner, Philando Castile, you know, like black men being killed, you know, daily. And he's like, I died for nothing. Like I fought for this and then I died apparently, and it just means nothing. And he in the first book, he actually goes to Capitol Hill, and there's a big scene that happens where he just basically addresses Congress, you know, angrily that, you know, nothing has changed. Why, it's not about black and white at that point. It's just about why hasn't America moved on from this? And that was really the catalyst for a lot of what the Golden Guard became. And again, social commentary being what it is, you think about Captain America number one, he's punching Hitler in the face, and like that, they attacked social commentary head on back then. And I think Carlos said it in our Kickstarter video. It's not unlike this book is not unlike the books that we are trying to emulate and the books that came before us. You know, comics can tell you like a lot about the world and about life. And there's a lot of, I like to think that comics are mythology, like American mythology specifically. And there's a lot that you can do and say. You just got to be able to see yourself in it, you know, and like, you know, you have to kind of put the shoe on the other foot, you know. And going back to what you were saying, Walt, about the square jaw hero, maybe it's time that guy goes away. Maybe he's had his time in the sun. Maybe it's time for Americana to be the new Superman. Do you know what I mean? Like, maybe she is the one that's going to kind of bring social discourse to a new level, you know?
Yeah, we're also seeing this in the military too, where they've decided to open up certain combat arms jobs to women and people who traditionally wouldn't be able to serve in those roles. So, I mean, you know, who knows? Maybe somebody on Capitol Hill. Somebody on Capitol Hill might have read something like the Golden Guard and said, "Hey, you know, this is what we got to do." So,
who knows? Maybe the person that reads this is a 20-something-year-old kid in college that reads this and then decides to go into public service and like that. You know, like maybe the military or, you know, politics. You know, maybe it will color their worldview to a point where there's for a positive, you know, like change. You know, I don't know.
Didn't there recently a senator or someone just get signed in with the Captain America shield? That happened a couple of months ago, didn't it? So it obviously happens.
Yeah, totally.
Absolutely. Now, so talking about how things can cross from one side to another, we already know that this is a comic. We've talked about Charlie, and we talked about a game. When I was looking at the preview the first time I saw it, I'm sitting there and I'm reading through it, and, you know, and I flip back to the front of it again, and I said, you know what would be really fun if we got if we got Jason Tondro, Dr. Comics, he's a frequent collaborator on the show. Have him.
Yeah, he did that game, didn't he? Like
Yep, he did the Supervillain Handbook.
Thank you. Yep. Thank you. I knew it, but I was like, so it was something that I didn't, you know.
How cool would it be to have Jason Tondro actually like act out with his students in class this scene from the comic, you know, and put that as a thing on the page? That would be amazing.
I think he should wait until the second book comes out, because there's a really and I tell you why, because so you have these characters coming back. Four of them find out that they died through like non-heroic means. Americana, she is, you know, as you saw in the preview, she's linked to the way Americans feel about themselves. And when she comes back to, she's been missing since 1945. So maybe there's a, like, she's supposed to be inspiring. Maybe there's a connection. Maybe that's why, you know, the, American self-esteem, let's say, has taken a hit. So, you know, you think about everything that's happened since 1944 when she disappeared. The atomic bomb was dropped. You know, you can make arguments that it was a necessary evil. And you can make the arguments that we really shouldn't have done that to other human beings. You know, so like, you know, you start from there and then you just keep going. And there's another atomic bomb connection that I don't want to give away until you guys see it. Then you go Korea, then you go to Vietnam, then you go to, you know, Watergate and like, you know, Kennedy being assassinated and stuff. And she's not around, you know, she's gone. She's missing from all this. And when she shows up, she slowly but surely starts to weaken and starts to lose a lot of her kind of a vitality. And you can see that she's starting to get old. And it's because Americans don't feel good about themselves. And that's another thing that I was very keen on, you know, you especially in this last election, like you saw the way the rhetoric went, and it was dirty and it was awful and it was just terrible. And we look outside of the window now, where we look on Facebook even worse, and you can see that people are just attacking each other for their ideologies. And I got into it with somebody that I went to high school today, and I said, you know, you spent 8 years criticizing a guy and I can't even do it within 100 days. Like, that's ridiculous. You know, like, I can criticize the president too. You know, it's just not right that you went through 8 years of torture, apparently, and now it's your time to shine. And like, now you can't accept criticism. It's like, no, like, that's not how it works, man. So with Americana, you know, losing, that's really what it is. Like, I feel like, you know, we don't have a flag to rally around in a sense, you know, like, I mean, we have a flag, but you know what I mean? Like, we don't have a hero. We don't have a symbol, you know, and that's kind of what Americana is supposed to be. She's supposed to be the symbol of America. She is the spirit of America. And if she starts going downhill, you know, how do we get her back? How do we get America back? And that's really another theme within the story. Sorry. Nice.
That's fine. It's all good. We've got our own guys, I'm sure.
I was gonna say you've got what's his name? Nigel, what's his name? So I'm sure you understand.
Oh, Farage. Hey. Yeah, all good. That's Mr. Farage. Yeah.
So what else do we what else is planned as far as crossing the media streams with the Golden Guard? We, like you said, we have the comics, we have games. Is there any other type of media that this might shift into?
Maybe. It's nothing I can talk about. I don't have a concrete answer for that. I know that there's interest. Because of that interest, I'm trying to push for an animated feature, maybe an animated series or something like that. But because I know where the story goes after we resolve this book ends with the bad guys in the modern era finding the horn, okay, the elephant. And so the second book, obviously the heroes are triumphant at the end. You know, it's just, where do they go from here? So I know where they go. You know, I know where the next iteration, you know, like, not the next iteration, but I know what the fight is going to be next, you know. So I could see that working in animation. You know, I don't know if this could be done live action, you know, but like, I wouldn't mind seeing a cartoon, like how DC does those directed DVD features. Like, I could see this working in that kind of format.
Which would be cool, because then we could get Aid to watch it.
I suppose, you know what, as you were saying it, I was just thinking, yeah, because that would be much better than any of that live action Marvel stuff. So, yeah.
I mean, I'm not opposed to live action. It's just, I don't think, you know what bothers me about live action comic book films is that we're supposed to kind of suspend disbelief that these guys will live forever, that Thor, Chris Hemsworth isn't getting older, like, because he is, and Thor is supposed to stay the same age. Like,
true.
If you keep it animated, they never age. They will stay the same age forever. And that's kind of like my thing against that stuff. But I love, you know, going to the movies and seeing stuff like that. You know, I love comic book themed movies, whether it be superhero, V for Vendetta. It's not great, but I still appreciate it as what it is. Same with Watchmen. Like, I've gotten a new appreciation for Watchmen over the past couple of years. Not because I'm a Zack Snyder apologist or anything, just because that's an impossible book to make into a movie. You know, the fact that somebody tried, you know, like, more power to them.
Right on. Aid, any other questions for Vito going forward?
Well, yeah, I was wondering, is this single books? Is this a mini series for each of the books, or is this, you know, specials, or what's the actual format going to be?
That's a great question, and I'm glad you asked that. So the idea is that it's going to be an annual, so it'll be 8.5 by 11 size, so it's bigger than a comic book. It's supposed to be kind of taking, it was a Dragon magazine, that role-playing game back in the 80s. It might still even be around. Dragon magazine and kind of heavy metal or epic, you know, kind of mixed together, you know, like, and not with newsprint per se, but like, you know, like just the feel of it. Like, I want it to be big and in your hands. So the first one is going to be 48 pages of comics and 16 pages of role-playing. So cool. That is, wow. And then there's a pull-out poster that's going to go in it. One side is a poster image of the team, and then the other side is a map for the game. It's a magazine, you know, like, it's the best way to put it, but it's an annual magazine. So the idea is that we want to build our customers, you know, like, I said this in another recent interview, like, that I just did last night. There was an article on Bleeding Cool a couple of weeks ago that said, keep your politics out of my comic store. So I don't think that this is a kind of book that, especially in America, I don't think that a lot of retailers will kind of get behind. Some will, I'm sure, you know, some, you know, it's a liberal thinking book, I'm sure, you know, like I'm a liberal, you know, I'm a socialist, but there aren't a lot of, you know, capitalists that, you know, try to sell books for a living that'll get behind a socialist leaning, a liberal leaning, you know, comic book about, you know, that criticizes, you know, a lot of what America is, you know. So if a retailer's not going to order it, a publisher's not going to publish it. So for me, getting direct access to you, to the customer, to the reader, is more important than trying to get it into stores. You know, so the idea then is we want to build a relationship with you. So we're going to give you this book in 7 months. So by October, you know, and Kraken Print is doing the printing. They're also going to do the fulfillment. So anybody that's backed my stuff before, that's waiting for stuff, don't worry. I have nothing to do with this. I'm just writing it and putting it out. Like, that's it. So idea then is March 2nd of 2018 will be the Kickstarter for the next book, which will be another magazine, which will be 64 pages of comics and 16 pages of role-playing. So now it's 80 pages. So you go from 64 to 80. So we're bumping it up because we need more pages to tell the story. And then the Kickstarter in March of 2019 will be for the collection. Like, if you missed out on the first two books, we're going to put them together, you know, make a trade paperback. You can't see my fingers being crossed, you know, anybody listening to this, but I really want to do it European album size, kind of like Molly Danger, you know, like that big kind of, you know, so that's going to be the third Kickstarter will be for the collection of the role-playing game with, and then the collection of the comics, you know, two different books, you know, like you can back one, back the other, back both, that kind of thing. And the money, since we don't have to pay for creating that stuff, the money that we're going to take from that will go towards the to Charlie McKelvey, Vito Del Sante, Carlos Caballero cosmic story that I alluded to earlier. So, which would have been the WatchGuard Aegis crossover, but it's going to be a one, like 80 page giant type of thing. And then book three will be 2020, book four will be 2021, and again, every year, perpetually, every year, we're going to just keep giving you content, a book once a year, like an annual, and just keep giving you stuff, you know, to build. This is possibly, I don't want to say it surpassed Stray as my favorite project to work on, but it's really, really up there. You know, like if they're not tied, this probably just edges it out. Because I think I'm being able to say a lot more things than I can with Stray, you know?
So it's now, Stray's going to go subsequent with this, isn't it? Yeah. So you still have this, obviously, the Stray ongoing. So technically speaking, some of these characters could show up in Stray at the same time. And so that kind of, again, keeps the ball rolling.
I'll tell you right now, Theo Concord, the Golden Age Captain Scarab, will appear in Stray number 5.
Fantastic. See? It's just keeping people remembering who these characters are. That's the thing.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Nice. And could we possibly see any crossover with, I know you mentioned Ray Height earlier. Could we see Midnight Tiger showing up in this too?
Midnight Tiger's in Strays 4 and 5, so he definitely sees action in, he definitely meets Theo, but I don't think he's going to show up in, he's not going to show up in the first book anyway. Maybe book 2, if I can get Ray to agree to it, you know, again, like, because Ray and I have this, connection and relationship with each other. Stray and Midnight Tiger happen in the same universe, so it's very likely that he could show up, but it's up to Ray completely. You know, I don't want to make any assumptions on his part. You know,
cool. Right on. So as we're rounding out the bottom of the show and heading toward the finish line, so far, I mean, judging by the strength of the handout that you send to us to kind of check out, and also by the conversation today, Golden Guard looks like it's going to be not only an ambitious project, but a very successful one, because you have a lot of, while it might be aimed at what America is, it also is aiming with what America could be. And I think that's a big draw for a lot of people. So is there anything that you didn't get to ask Aid that you'd like to ask Vito before we split? And when Aid finishes up, Vito, same question for you. Is there anything you'd like us to know about Golden Guard? So okay. Aid,
you're first.
I think I'm covered. I'm looking forward to it. It's like, main question is, Why did you decide to go for Golden Age characters as the basis? Is it just because you wanted the time travel thing and the kind of this, or are you particularly fond of Golden Age characters anyway? Is it something you always want to emulate?
It's all of it.
Yeah.
It's all of that. I mean, I know that the chances of 44-year-old me getting to write JSA for DC are slim to none.
Yeah. And, although Jake Garrick is coming back.
And this isn't time. This isn't a JSA story, though. This isn't the story I would do with the JSA. but I know that my chances of doing that are slim to none, with an emphasis on none. But I don't want to go through my career not having a chance to do something like this. You know, like to work with – I love the Golden Age. You know, I love Golden Age characters. Wildcat is one of my favorites. I love the JSA. I have the first omnibus of the JSA up there right on my bookshelf. It's just, I've always been a history buff. My grandfather was a super, super big influence on me. So Golden Age and 1940s, anything, movies. I'm a big Marx Brothers fan. Cool. So, you know, and Universal Monsters, you know, like, so that stuff, I've always been one of those weird young guys. you know, like people in our generation. I was always weird because I would rather watch that stuff than you know, a lot of the stuff that took me years to watch Blazing Saddles. Like it wasn't interesting to me. I'd rather watch like Sinbad or Jason and the Argonauts, you know, Ray Harryhausen stuff. You know, like, I was a super weird kid, you know, like I kind of gravitated towards that. I love Blazing Saddles, let me just say, but I gravitated towards that stuff, like Bela Lugosi, Boris Karloff, you know, Lon Chaney Jr. Like I knew those guys' names at the same time as going to Star Wars and knowing Harrison Ford. So for me, like that stuff has just always been stuff that I've been interested in. I love jazz music. I love fashion from that time. I love Art Deco, you know, like it's really, and the thing that reinforced it, that I should mention is James Robinson's work on Starman and the Golden Age.
Cool.
Like those two things kind of like made me want to be a creator in the first place, which is, you know, you go back to my Mercury Chronicles book that I never really put out. That was supposed to be a Golden Age book. So it's just my chance to do Golden Age, you know, the way I want to do it.
Very good.
Nice. Vito, parting shots for folks who are going to check out the Kickstarter. Is it Thursday that it launches?
It launches March 2nd, this Thursday. The only thing I really want to say is that I know I talk a lot, and I know it sounds like I'm the guy in charge or whatever, you know, or the main person. But I really hope you guys get a chance to talk to Charlie and Carlos, because they are, like, without a doubt, so important to this book. This book doesn't look the way it looks without Carlos. It also doesn't read the way it reads without Charlie. You know, and again, like there were other creators involved in the book before this. So it could have been a totally different book, you know, like maybe it wouldn't be so personal and so politically tinged, let's say, like colored, you know, as it is now, you know, but for what it is, what it's going to do, I feel like this is, without overly being hyperbolic, you know, being overly hyperbolic, like, if this gets into the right hands, if it gets to the right people that, you know, need to hear this, you know, or need to read this kind of book, it could be the most important book of the year. It could be, you know, like it says so much, you know, like it, and maybe that doesn't happen until book two comes out, you know, where you find out how important this book is, but it could change a lot of lives, you know, like maybe changing lives is being really over hyperbolic, but it could change perception. I think, you know, it could hopefully help people.
Right on. That's
awesome. I don't know, man. Like, I don't know. Well, I'm just writing comics, you know. That's, but like I'm writing,
so don't worry about it. It's all good.
You know, I'm
glad you're so passionate about it. That's the thing. Absolutely. You're honest about it, and it's really good. So it's fantastic to hear this is something you're striving for. So yeah, excellent.
You know, and I can remember when I was younger, I used to carry this Captain America keychain in my rucksack, and I had somebody ask me once, they're like, what's the deal with the keychain? And I said, you know, it's against regulation for me to carry a real shield. I mean, so books like Captain America, you know, stuff like that, that did a lot to inform me as a young man and set the direction of my life. So, I mean, if somebody sees this book and reads it and gets what you're trying to go for, you might influence somebody like that as well. So that's definitely a good goal to strive for.
Well, you know, I've always never lacked for ambition. You know, that's a thing. But the one thing I really want to make sure that I say is that I don't have to. I want to make a book that moves people. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't have to be a lot of fighting, a lot of, you know, like spectacular, you know, stunts or whatever, you know, comics have, you know, like explosions or whatever. You know, like, it doesn't have to. I just want to move people. You know, and if I can move you, if I can make you think and make you feel something, then I've done something. You know what I mean? I've done something important.
That's fantastic. And everybody should go immediately to Thunderclap. search for the Golden Guard, and then or can they get it through your Facebook page to Vito?
Well, the Facebook page for the Golden Guard is facebook.com/thegoldenguardcomic, all one word. So like they'll be able to find find it all there.
Nice. And we should definitely expand the digital footprint for that so that we can get this.
There's also a Twitter for the Golden Guard. Well, not for the Golden Guard, but for Three Road Studio, which is me, Charlie, and Carlos.
Nice.
Because we might do more projects that aren't Golden Guard under that banner. So just go to @3RoadStudio, one word, Three Road Studio.
And just remember, Mr. Aid Smith is also a comics creator, and at some point we need to get Benjora out there.
One day. I actually did some more yesterday, but that's not the point.
Oh, did you really?
Yes.
Nice. So just everybody should rally immediately. Set the date for Thursday, March 2nd, is it? Mm-hmm. God, I'm terrible at dates. And get to Kickstarter immediately. Fund it big, fund it loud, and let's get the Golden Guard published. Vito, thank you so much for taking taking an hour and hanging with us today. We really appreciate it.
Absolutely. I love it.
And this is going to be part one. So my intent is get Charlie and then track down Carlos and then get them all on here for an hour as well. And that should hopefully cover the three perspectives and really give people an insight as to what the Golden Guard is.
You're going to have to pull some out of Carlos because he's a little shy sometimes. But like once you get him going, he'll go.
That's okay. If I have to do it, if I have to do it in different languages, funny voices, you name it, I can work it out. So this has been Walt and Aid sitting down with Mr. Vito Del Sante, who's been very generous with his time to share with us a little bit of Golden Guard today. And with that, Banff, and we're out.